Here we go. Good morning. We are here simply for a roll call in advance of our field trip, and this is to confirm that we have a quorum, I suppose, for the boat ride.
You ready?
Please, Jeffrey.
Commissioner Beelen?
Here.
Commissioner Cox?
Here.
Commissioner Groom?
Present.
Commissioner Hell?
Here.
Commissioner Webinel?
Here.
Commissioner McClure?
Here.
Commissioner Schallenberger?
Here.
Commissioner Uranga?
Presente.
Chair Kinsey?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. With this, our first item is the field trip to Humboldt Bay, and I'm going to let Bob tell us how we're going to get there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The buses are lining up just outside on Rousseau Street, which is right the same street where the parking lot is. They should be there right now. Just wanted to indicate that if you wanted to leave items here, you can do so. There'll either be someone here or the door will be locked. When we come back, we'll be going directly to the lunch buffet stop, so we can drop you off closer to that. The lunch buffet we can either have in the banquet room or bring back here. We can decide that later, but just to let you know, you'll be going back to the banquet room and then having a five-minute walk so you can walk through campus to get back here. The tour should be about 2 hours, give or take. Hopefully the fog will lift for us, and I think that's it. So if you would be so kind as to gather up and head downstairs, cross Rousseau Street, and you'll see the bus there, and go ahead and enter the bus. Thank you.
Good afternoon. We are going to begin the afternoon session of the California Coastal Commission. Having had an excellent field trip this morning on Humboldt Bay, I want to thank Humboldt State University for making that opportunity available to us, along with a number of other public agency partners and that participated. I think all we need to do at this point is to confirm our quorum, because we did have roll call earlier in the day. Do we have a quorum?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Okay, very good. So the first item we'll take up in our session this afternoon is public comment. And I'm going to invite Richard James up. And Richard has 9 minutes, if he'd like it. How much time would you like?
I would like all nine.
You'd like all nine?
As fast
okay.
as I can, but I might fill all nine.
Okay.
I did hand out handouts. I was told to say that I did that.
Okay.
Ahead of time.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for the time and for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Richard James. I live in Inverness, California, on the shores of Tomales Bay. And that's a body of water that I cherish very much. and I'm here to talk about the Bay and about some things that happen on the Bay that I'm a little concerned about around Tomales Bay oyster farming. Closer to the mic. Excuse me. Sorry about that. So I'll just jump right in. So Tomales Bay oyster farming, is it worthy of praise or pause? And before I get into my presentation, I want to frame some of my comments with some sobering facts that I've learned recently. Earlier this year, Jenna Jambeck out of the University of Georgia published a study. And in that study, it's hard to see on this screen, but in their study, they have determined that as much as 8 million metric tons of plastic slip into the ocean around the world every year. And that was published in the journal Science in February of 2015. And down in Australia, just a couple months ago, another study was published. And in that study, plastic pollution concentrations in the ocean, it was determined, reach 580,000 pieces per square kilometer, and that production is increasing exponentially. And with that exponential increase means that there's a doubling time of 11 years. So between now and 2026, we will make, as humans, we will make as much plastic as has ever been made in the next 11 years. And they predict that by 2050, 99%, sorry about that, of all seabirds will have plastic in their guts. And that is a Laysan albatross right there that's got plastic in its guts. That's a bird that nests out on the Midway Atoll. That's a photo taken by Chris Jordan. Those birds take turns flying 2,000. Sorry about that. I'm not quite sure where to stand to get a good sound. Those birds take turns flying 2,000 miles in search of food for their chicks, and more they pick up plastic and feed their chicks that plastic, and those chicks die by the thousands every year out on Midway Atoll. So with that in mind, let's go local. Sorry about that. So that's Tomales Bay. Those colored polygons represent leases, oyster leases, administered by the Fish and Game Commission. I'm going to talk about some of the leases in the south and in the north today. That big green region, that's a lease run by Tomales Bay Oyster Company down by Inverness. And what you see there was left by the prior leaseholder. Much of what you see there is still out there. Some of it's been removed, but that plastic gets loose, and I find those trays and those pipes all over Tomales Bay. What you see right there, that is rusty iron racks. Those are oyster racks that have been left there. Some of what you see has been recovered. Much of what you see is still out there. Again, this is Tomales Bay Oyster Company lease. A little further north, the brown lease is lease number 19 that's run by Marin Oyster Company. And what you see here are 10 very large plastic drums full of concrete. Those are abandoned anchors that have been there as long as I've lived in the area, which is 8 years. I have a feeling they've been there much longer than that. In this photo, you can see what was a failed attempt to build artificial reefs out of plastic bags with non-native oyster shells so that Olympia oysters could potentially set on those bags. And according to John Finger, one of the owners of Hog Island, that was a failed attempt to do that. There's virtually no Olympia oysters on these bags. Now we're jumping up north. This is north of Walker Creek, up in the north end of Tomales Bay. That big green blob up the top of the screen, that's a lease currently run by Hog Island. I'm going to show items that were left there by people many, many years before Hog Island. So this is not stuff that's left by Hog Island. Hog runs this lease, but what we're about to see are items like these pilings. These are most likely creosote-imbued pilings that were part of what they call the High Line. So this is one end of an oyster chairlift that moved oysters out of the bay onto the shore to this truck body, and then those oysters were transported out to Petaluma. And there's the winches that were used to operate that. And all of that's still just been left there for decades. So this is legacy debris. These are birds that were part of what are called Stanway racks that are used to culture baby oysters. And it's my understanding that when those birds wear out and need to be replaced, they're pulled off and just left. And I've found these birds, and I continue to find these birds all over Tomales Bay. I picked these birds up, and Hog Island came up with their boat, and they pulled them out. So these are no longer littering the bay. These are more of the artificial reefs in a northern location. This, what you can see, those pilings that are sticking up, these are very, very old 2x6 pilings, very similar to the structures that have been left in Drake's Estero. These formed racks, that tube and wire cluster farming technique. These, again, I'm assuming creosote-imbued pilings were just left. There's about 120 that I've counted sticking up out of the mud, again, for decades. So now we'll move south a little bit to that big blue, irregularly shaped polygon, and that's run by the Point Reyes Oyster Company. This is not legacy debris. This is out there right now. So this is a view of a rack and bag culturing method. So you can see those weird-looking, they almost look like bed frames with bags on top. It's kind of a hodgepodge. It's not, in my view, it's not a very well-kept lease. And in contrast, just a few hundred feet away, that is lease 11. That's run by Hog Island Oyster. So that's one way of doing it. This is back to the Point Reyes way of doing it. And I've walked this lease quite a few times. These bags are put out there at high tide, tied to the racks with plastic-coated copper wire, and then they come back a year and a half, 2.5 years later to pull them at high tide, and then they just drop the copper wire into the mud. And I've walked that area at low tide numerous times, and I've picked up about 40 pounds of this wire. And you can see what the sunshine does to that wire when it lays out there for a long time. And I've probably just scratched the surface. It's hard to see. The image is very dark today, but in the middle of that photo, there's a plastic grow-out bag that's almost completely obscured by pickleweed. I vacuumed this area less than 3 weeks prior to this photo being taken. This is at the mouth of Walker Creek. I picked up over 50 bags. There were no bags in this area, and I came out. And so this is to show you how quickly this debris is obscured by nature. And historically, the oyster farmers would go out once a year and do yearly cleanups. This is less than 3 weeks. So you can see these bags can become part of the substrate very quickly. So I've given these to the Fish and Game Commission and to the growers, and they've got their own best management practices. But I think the growers need to uniquely identify their gear so that someone other than myself, namely the Fish and Game or the Department of Wildlife, Fish and Wildlife, could come out and know whose gear they're finding. One technique they use is they fill these bags with baby oysters. They deploy these bags at high tide, just as they are, bundles of five. They come back later, low tide, tie them down. Problem is the intervening time, the tides and the winds blow these bags all over. I found that bundle a mile up Walker Creek away from the lease areas. And I suggested that they stop using easily degradable materials such as these plastic-wrapped blue foam. The birds peck at it, think it's food. I find that foam all over Tomales Bay. I'm going to roll to the end of the presentation here really quickly so that I can get to some closing points. They need to stop leaving tools and equipment in the bay. The bay is not their garage workshop. I find PVC pipe and tools and rope all over the bay. This is on the Tomales Bay Oyster Company lease. I find that they're one of the most egregious offenders in sort of trash in the bay. Stop using zip ties. Use these halibut clips that, for instance, Hog Island uses. I found 406 zip ties right off the retail operations at Tomales Bay in one day. You can see that high spike on the left there. That's the day I found 406. That chart shows what I found over the past 87 weeks. I want to get right to there. I want to get to this since I'm almost out of time. Can one agency promote mariculture in public waters and effectively protect nature from mariculture in public waters? Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. Next, I have Steve Ray, and he'll have 6 minutes. And I have no other public comment cards today.
Does that mean I get the whole rest of the 30 minutes?
Welcome.
Good morning, or afternoon, I guess it is, isn't it, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. It's good to see you again this morning. First of all, I must apologize. I have made it a practice over the years that I've been speaking to you, the Commission, not to ever speak twice at any single Commission hearing, but I am breaking my rule for this occasion, primarily because next month you were going to have the Banning Ranch project before you, and it's my last chance to talk to you outside of the formal hearing process for that. So I wanted to take opportunity and please bear with me for this second appearance before you at this hearing. Just to kind of go back and kind of cover one thing we've kind of talked about before, is that when the city of Newport Beach approved the Banning Ranch project, the Banning Ranch Conservancy litigated that approval. It went to trial court. We had two primary issues. One, there was a violation of the California Environmental Quality Act and the provisions in the EIR. Second, that the city had violated its own general plan because there was a voter-approved amendment to the general plan that made Banning Ranch being a permanent open space a number one priority for the city. And second, that the city was required to work with and coordinate with the Coastal Commission and staff to identify wetlands on site and to identify environmentally sensitive habitat on site in order to determine whether there was any development footprint for which a project could be approved. And that all had to be done prior to any approval of a development. The city failed on both regards, so we litigated. Went to trial court, and amazingly for an Orange County court, we prevailed. That doesn't happen in Orange County, that the environment wins, but we prevailed. It was then sent to the appellate court. The city and the developers appealed it. It went to the appellate court, and we knew we would lose there because there's one judge that gets all the appellate decisions, and he always rules against the environment. And that was the case here, and he's really gone a little rogue now, and his decision stretched it as far as he could. And so we lost then at the appeals court. We then filed a petition to the California Supreme Court, and with the incredible speed that the Supreme Court never acts under, they agreed to hear our case by a unanimous decision on all issues that we raised, and ordered us to begin briefing the case immediately, which is also very unlike the Supreme Court's modus operandi. So we are in that process. We are expecting that the briefing schedule will be completed in December, and we expect that it will go to hearing shortly thereafter, and the decision will be coming down fairly soon thereafter. We sense that the court is anxious to take up this case, and in terms of its that Supreme Court decision on the commission, you, of course, will consult your legal staff about this, there may not necessarily be a direct impact on the Coastal Commission of that decision, depending on what that decision might be. And you may go forward and handle this hearing next month and let it move forward from there. So when you are looking at that, given that the Supreme Court may weigh in later and say that it all has to all go back to the city again, we'll see how that goes. But given that it's coming before you, just a few things to keep in mind. First of all, we have said before also that we recommend that you just completely deny the project. This is 401 acres. They're planning to build 1,375 homes, a resort hotel complex, not just a hotel, but a complex that goes with it. And then they're doing a lot of other commercial retail space on the site as well for that project. This overwhelms the environment out there, and because it was poorly accounted for in anything they did before, we have supplemented the record with a tremendous amount of scientific work. 1984, Peter Douglas, I was working on the Bolsa Chica case, and Peter Douglas said to a small group of us meeting with his office, said, you know, just do the science, guys, and so I've been following that dictate ever since then, and we've done the science on this, and the science shows that there is a tremendous amount of valuable habitat on that site. There are 19 listed species on site, the coastal sage scrub habitat, maritime scrub habitat, willow wetland habitat. It's just ripe with all kinds of habitat with species. It's an incredible economical system out there, and it needs to be preserved. So our recommendation to you, and we'll get into more detail at the hearing next month, will be that you just deny it outright. Our opinion is that almost the entire site can and should be declared ESHA, Environmentally Sensitive Habitat Area, meaning under the Coastal Act and per the Bolsa Chica decision that nothing can happen on any of that ESHA or on the wetlands there. So we look forward to coming before you next month with the case. There's going to be a lot of excitement, probably be a large crowd. We will keep all of that under control and make sure we only have designated speakers for making our presentation. But we look forward to talking to you and look forward to a complete denial of the project application. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, that completes our public comment. And I noticed that Lori's class is here and want to welcome you all. Thanks for joining us last evening as well at the reception. And we feel very inspired by our time here at Humboldt State University. Had an excellent tour this morning on the ship that the university maintains in the bay. We could do agenda changes. I omitted that. Bob, do you want to go through agenda changes, and then we'll carry on?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before I do the agenda changes, I'll just make a couple of quick announcements. If there's anyone in the audience that wants to speak on any of the other items, you'll need to fill out a speaker slip that you can obtain on the table outside the door. Fill that out and give it to a staff member. The other thing is if people would please turn your cell phones to mute or turn them off so that you don't disturb the meeting. Thank you. As far as the agenda changes, we have a few of them. Beginning on page number 10, item Thursday 9A, the application of Cunnell, that's been withdrawn. Also on page 10, item 9B, the application of Sequoia 10 LLC, that's moving to consent. On page 10, item 12A, the application of University of Southern California, that's been postponed. And lastly, on page 10, item 12B, application number of the City of Los Angeles Department of Public Works is moving to consent. And then on page 11, item 13A, the permit amendment of Freeport-McMoRan Oil and Gas is postponed. And then on the addendum, there's a couple of changes. Item 14.5, the cease and desist order for Bank of America N.A. has been postponed. And the companion restoration order, item 14.7 for Bank of America N.A., has also been postponed. And those are the changes. And Mr. Chair, Allison Detmer, our Deputy Director in charge of the Energy and Ocean Resources Unit, is away on vacation this week and couldn't be here. So I will present the administrative calendar item for Energy and Ocean Resources, and Charles will present the balance of the energy items once we get to that point on the agenda. So item 5A is an administrative application of the Tomales Bay Oyster Company to remove berm and fence structures offshore of Preston Point along the east side of Tomales Bay near Marshall in Marin County. And we're aware of no opposition or controversy regarding this item, and we recommend that you concur with the executive director's determination that the development is consistent with the Coastal Act and qualifies for processing as an administrative permit. So unless a third or more of the appointed membership of the commission requests that the item be removed from the administrative calendar and scheduled for a public hearing at a subsequent meeting, the permit will become effective. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any commissioners who wish to take this matter up specifically? And we will consider it to be an administrative action.
That brings us into the actual North Coast District portion of the agenda. And the North Coast also has an administrative item, item 5A, application of Wildlands Conservancy. This is a request to modify a permit recently granted for the repair and maintenance of a ranch road facility, including a culvert. The purpose of the amendment is to allow for a larger diameter culvert, which will reduce channel flow constrictions and reduce stream bank erosion. Similarly, we're aware of no opposition or controversy regarding this item, and we recommend that you concur with the determination to grant the administrative permit.
Thank you. Are there any questions, comments on this matter, any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Then we do a concur with that.
That brings us to item six, the Deputy Director's report. There is one waiver in the pink addendum for the Deputy Director's report, and this is for an application submitted by Ron Cannell for the repair and maintenance of two existing cabin structures on Indian Island in Humboldt Bay. The commission may remember seeing that on the tour this morning. I should point out that this is related to the application that was withdrawn. The applicant has revised his project description in a way that greatly reduces proposed development to simply the repair and maintenance of the cabin structures with no use of mechanized equipment. The cabins are located on upland area, and we believe that as there are no apparent impacts on coastal resources, that the project qualifies for processing as a waiver. We are aware of, no opposition or controversy involving this item, and we recommend that you concur with the executive director's determination to grant the waiver.
Thank you. Are there any questions about this? Any concerns? Any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? And we do approve that.
That brings us to item 7, the North Coast consent calendar. And when I announced the changes, there was one item from the North Coast agenda that moved to consent, and that was item 9B, the Sequoia 10 LLC application involving the merger and redivision of 7 parcels on the Samoa Peninsula into 2. And the project will facilitate expansion of the Hog Island aquaculture facilities on Humboldt Bay. We also noted that site during the tour this morning. Again, we've received no objections, aware of no controversy regarding this application, and we recommend that the Commission approve the project under the consent calendar.
Thank you. Commissioner McClure?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Please. Commissioner Schellenberger.
Yeah, a quick question of staff in terms of process. So assuming we do go ahead and approve this, and you say that it's being done to accommodate Hog Island oysters, will that come back to us as a permit, the Hog Island?
Actually, the commission did approve a permit for the physical development at the site at a previous meeting, and then it was discovered that the lot line adjustment was needed by the county to be able to process it. I understand that there may be an amendment to that earlier permit for the physical development that's coming your way also, which should come, I believe, probably in the next month or so.
Okay. I was just curious, given the public testimony about some of the associated debris with the oyster business, when we would have an opportunity to address that, make sure it doesn't happen, basically. It's not here, is really, and then I can talk with you offline. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have a motion and a second on consent. Any unwillingness for unanimous consent? Okay, we do approve that consent calendar. And I will just say, again, feeling a little self-conscious with the students here, this is not all we do, arcane things like yes, no, yes, no. We mix it up a good bit when controversial matters get in front of us. And I don't know that we'll have anything that will be a substantive argument today, but stay tuned. Thank you. Bob.
Well, that's a good segue. We'll at least have more discussion about the next item, which that's is right. Item 8A, the Humboldt County LCP amendment for Big Lagoon Park. And this amendment involves reconfiguring the boundary lines between a residential and coastal commercial timberland land use and zoning designations on a particular parcel at Big Lagoon Park. This is the site of one of the projects we would have looked at yesterday had we been able to do the bus field trip that we ran out of time to do. And here to present the application today is our North Coast District Permit Supervisor, Melissa Kramer. But before I turn the application over to Melissa, I would like to say a word about the substantial addendum that you received that we prepared and distributed to you on Tuesday evening. The LCP amendment is proposed to accommodate a specific development proposal involving the relocation of existing cabins away from a rapidly eroding bluff. And the relocations of the cabins is really a classic example of planned retreat as a response to bluff erosion, where instead of trying to armor the bluff edge, the cabins will be moved inland out of harm's way, and the bluff will be allowed to erode as it naturally would. As Melissa will touch on in her presentation, we believe the receiving site where the cabins would be relocated can accommodate residential development consistent with the Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act. So staff had originally recommended certification of the LCP amendment as submitted because the proposed amendment, we felt, could be found consistent with the applicable Coastal Act standards. We continue to support the redesignation and rezoning of those portions of the subject 13-acre parcel, However, upon a closer review of the local coastal development permit for the relocation of the cabins, which has already been approved by the county and which would be subject to appeal to the commission, staff discovered that our recommendation of approval as submitted would not actually accomplish the county's desired objective of trying to accommodate the relocation. We've determined that the relocation of the cabins to the site would conflict with various provisions of the LCP affecting allowable density of development. Therefore, staff now recommends that the commission initially deny and then certify the LCP amendment with modifications that will modify the density requirements in a manner that would achieve the county's desired objective and ensure consistency with Section 30250 and 30253 of the Coastal Act at the same time. We discovered the density conflict too late to be able to resolve the issue and modify the staff recommendation prior to its publication. But rather than postpone the item to a future meeting to allow time for a revised report to be prepared, which would have delayed certification of the amendment and not allowed the hearing to occur today in the local area, staff chose instead to publish the report as is and then prepare an addendum to make the changes. So as a consequence, however, we apologize for the rather large addendum that we would normally not wish to burden with you and the public at this time. We have discussed the changes in the addendum with both the county staff and the property owners, and they have not objected to the suggested modifications. Mr. Don Tuttle, president of the board of directors of the Big Lagoon Park Company, is here today, and we understand he will indicate the property owners accept the recommendation. And also Michelle Nielsen of the county staff is available also. So I just wanted to indicate that information about the addendum, and I'll now turn the microphone over to Melissa to present the balance of the staff recommendation.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So you'll get to see some of the area in the PowerPoint that you would have gotten to see yesterday. So Humboldt County has applied for a major LCP amendment to redesignate and rezone a 13-acre lot in the Big Lagoon area. Next slide, please. Big Lagoon is located approximately 8 miles north of the city of Trinidad in northern Humboldt County. The subject site is located at the south end of Big Lagoon. The lot is partially forested and surrounded by rural residential development, commercial timberlands, county and state park and recreation lands, a public school, and trust lands of the Big Lagoon Rancheria. Next slide, please. The site is part of an uplifted marine terrace with elevations ranging from about 40 to 90 feet above mean sea level. The lot is owned by the Big Lagoon Park Company, which is a consortium of residential cabin owners who commonly own the land on which 76 existing individually owned residential structures are located. The individual residences, which are primarily used for weekend or seasonal occupancy, were built in approximately 1930. All of the cabins are served by on-site individual sewage disposal systems and by two wells, which are located within the park company property. So there you can see many of the cabins, and the other structures that you see to the south are single-family residences developed in the Big Lagoon Estates subdivision, which is an area of deferred certification under the county's North Coast Area Plan. Next slide, please. Slide 4 shows three lots that are owned by the Big Lagoon Park Company. There's the subject 13-acre lot, which is undeveloped, a 28-acre lot to the north, which is developed with the 76 residential cabins, and a separate 15-acre lot, which is undeveloped, forested, and planned and zoned for commercial timberland uses. And a portion of the Big Lagoon Park Company's water system is on that third lot. Next slide, please. Slide 5 shows the existing and proposed land use designations for the site. The lot is currently split designated with residential estates RE and commercial timberland TC land use and zoning designations. As submitted, the proposed LCP amendment would reconfigure the boundary lines between the RE and TC land use and zoning designations such that the residential area would cover most of the middle of the lot with the timberland designated area and surrounding the RE designated area. Next slide, please. Slide 6 shows the existing and proposed zoning for the lot. In tandem with the land use designations, the lot also is currently split zoned with residential single family, RS, and commercial timberland, TC, zones. As submitted, the zoning would be reconfigured such that the RS zone would match the RE land use designation in the middle of the lot, and the TC zone would run coincident with the TC land use designation around the residential area. And there currently are two overlay or combining zones that apply to the site. The X combining zone, which means no further subdivision allowed, currently follows the RS zoned area. And in addition, there's a D combining zone for design review that currently applies to the entire property. And as submitted, the D combining zone would continue to apply to the entire property. The X combining zone would apply to the RS zone, and an additional P combining zone would be added to the proposed residential zone. The P combining zone is for planned unit development, and it's applied to the site. It would specify design guidelines for planned unit developments with respect to circulation considerations, parking standards, common areas, and other considerations. Next slide, please. Slide 7 summarizes the proposed changes. Essentially, 2.4 acres of land will be taken out of residential use and designated for commercial timberland uses, and there will be a corresponding net reduction of land that is within the urban limit line. Since under the existing certified North Coast Area Plan, the urban limit line is used to designate areas that are served by community water systems. In this case, the Big Lagoon Park Company's water system, which currently serves the existing cabins on the adjacent lot, would also serve the proposed 4.8-acre residential area. Next slide, please. So this LCP amendment application raises a number of Coastal Act issues, a few of which I'll highlight here. Next slide, please. Currently, the area designated for commercial timberland uses does not support forest vegetation throughout, as seen in the left photo. Also, currently, much of the existing residential area is covered with mature Sitka spruce trees, as seen in the right photo. While there's about 7 acres of forest land on the lot, a forestry analysis completed for the property concluded that the lot does not constitute commercial timberlands of a commercial size because the harvesting of the timber would produce no net revenue to the landowner due to the cost of the necessary timber harvesting plan that would be required to log the timber relative to the market value of the spruce timber. Staff believes that the proposed conversion of the acreage that's being redesignated from TC to RE is not a conversion of commercial timberlands in a unit of commercial size. Staff also believes that the LCP amendment will protect the productivity of timberlands by appropriately redesignating forest lands from RE to TC and by expanding the net timberlands on the property by 2.4 acres. Therefore, staff believes that the LCP amendment is consistent with Section 30243 of the Coastal Act. Next slide, please. There are no sensitive species or habitats within the area planned to be redesignated for residential uses. However, Roundhouse Creek flows across the western end of the property in a canyon area approximately 35 feet below the relatively level open grassy area in the center of the property. As previously mentioned, the open grassy area seen in the photo currently is planned for TC uses and would be redesignated for residential uses. The creek corridor and other forested portions of the property currently are planned for residential uses and would be redesignated for commercial timberland uses. The entire residential designated area is at least, or the area proposed to be redesignated for residential uses, is at least 100 feet from the environmentally sensitive riparian and aquatic habitats that have been delineated on the property. So future development in the residential area will be set back appropriately to protect ESHA and water quality. All ESHA on the property would be located within the proposed timber-designated area. Future timber harvesting activities that may occur in that area around the ESHA would be required to include appropriate measures to protect water quality and ESHA resources, and these measures would apply regardless of whether the future timber removal activities are permitted under the CDP process with the LCP as the standard of review or are permitted regulated under California forest practice rules. Therefore, staff believes that the LCP amendment is consistent with the water quality and ESHA protection policies of the Coastal Act. Next slide, please. One of the most significant issues for the area is geologic hazards. Extraordinary rates of bluff erosion have been measured in the area since at least the 1930s, measuring up to 60 feet of bluff retreat in a season in some events. Sudden catastrophic bluff failure events have led to the emergency relocations of homes in the area along the bluffs between Big Lagoon and Patrick's Point on numerous occasions, including emergency relocations of cabins on the Big Lagoon Park Company property. There were 12 cabin relocations in the 1940s, 12 in the 1980s, and 3 in the last 15 years. There also have been some relocations in the Big Lagoon Estates subdivision to the south. The areas in the upper photograph correspond with the areas in the lower photograph to show some significant erosional areas. Next slide, please. The proposed LCP amendment is contemplated, as Bob said, in order to plan for the creation of up to 14 additional relocation sites on the subject lot as part of the Big Lagoon Park Company's long-term planning effort to address ongoing bluff retreat concerns for the existing cabins. The 4.8-acre area to be redesignated for residential uses would be located a minimum distance of 355 feet inland from the bluff edge at an elevation of about 80 feet above mean sea level. Based on the best available science and conservative bluff retreat rate estimates, staff believes that the RE-designated area at this time is sufficiently set back from the bluff edge. However, the LCP amendment as submitted does not specifically provide for relocated development to be sited and designed such that it assures stability and structural integrity and at no time engenders the need for the construction of a shoreline protection device, which would substantially alter the natural landforms along the bluffs here. As explained in the addendum, the county has already approved a CDPA authorizing the cabin relocation. They've 14 cabins to be relocated onto the subject site from the adjacent 28-acre site. The submittal of the final local action notice is pending certification of this LCP amendment application. The county approved the CDP includes no conditions prohibiting the future construction of shoreline protection. So while the proposed LCP amendment as submitted will facilitate the removal of existing development out of geologically hazardous areas to more resilient areas further set back from the bluff edge, the approved permit does not contain prohibitions against the future development of shoreline protection to protect the relocated cabins, which would be inconsistent with Section 30253 of the Coastal Act, given the extraordinary bluff retreat hazards in the area. Next slide, please. In addition, as also explained in the addendum, the LCP amendment as submitted raises issues related to density and conformance with Section 30250 of the Coastal Act. As mentioned, the county already approved the cabin relocation plan to relocate the cabins from the adjacent site, and the county will submit the notice of final local action once this LCP amendment application is certified. The density limitations for RE-designated and RS-zoned lands under the existing LCP limit density to one dwelling unit per acre and no more than one primary residence per lot. With the X combining zone, which currently applies to the 13-acre site and will continue to apply to the site under the proposed LCP amendment as submitted, the lot cannot be further subdivided. The same density limitations apply to the adjoining 28-acre lot that's developed with the existing cabins. Therefore, it's not possible to permit the relocation of the 14 cabins to the proposed 4.8-acre residential area consistent with the currently certified LCP or with the LCP as proposed to be amended by the county. In addition, the LCP policies regarding nonconformity specify that nonconforming uses may only occupy the same area that is occupied by the existing nonconforming use. So the continuance of the nonconforming density would impermissibly be extended to a different area. If the LCP amendment submittal is modified to include certain specific provisions to ensure consistency with all LCP provisions and to prevent an increase in the overall development potential of the commonly owned property comprising the Big Lagoon Park area, staff believes that the LUP amendment could be found consistent with Section 30250 of the Coastal Act. Next slide, please. So staff recommends three suggested modifications, which are shown on pages 6 and 7 of the addendum to the staff report. These suggested modifications would modify the density provisions of the LCP to allow for the relocation of the existing cabins to the subject property, provided that the relocation of existing structures from the 28-acre lot to the subject lot will result in no increase in development potential because the commonly owned lots are either legally merged or treated as one parcel under a binding agreement required to be executed and recorded pursuant to a valid CDP authorizing the relocation of the existing residential development. Also, the property comprising the subject lot must be capable of being developed with relocated existing residential development consistent with all applicable policies and standards of the certified LCP. And finally, the relocation of the existing residential development must be sited and designed such that it assures stability and structural integrity and at no time engenders the need for the construction of a shoreline protection device. As Bob said, Commission staff discussed the suggested modifications and the need to amend the previously approved permit for the relocation of the cabins with planning staff from the county and with the Big Lagoon Park Company. And neither the county staff or the Big Lagoon Park Company has objected to the suggested modifications or to amending the CDP. Last slide, please. So the Commission's procedures require that if the Commission wishes to certify an amendment with modifications, the Commission must first deny the LCP amendment request as submitted and then certify the amendment if modified as suggested, incorporating the recommended changes. Therefore, staff recommends, per the revised motions shown on pages 4 through 6 of the staff report addendum, that the Commission, upon completion of the public hearing, deny the LCP amendment as submitted and then certify the amendment if modified as suggested. And this concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you. We'll now ask for any ex partes. These are meetings outside of the regular commission meeting in which individual commissioners meet with either applicants or interested parties. Do we have any ex partes on this one? And seeing none, and I don't see any speaker cards on this. That's because we're back from a field trip. Okay. I'd like to invite up Don Tuttle from the Big Lagoon Park Company, the applicant's representative, and ask how much time you'd like to speak. Mr. Tuttle?
I'd like at least a minute.
Boy. Okay, I think we'll give you two just to see what you can do with it.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. I'm Don Tuttle, President of the Big Lagoon Park Company Board of Directors. We support the staff recommendations in the addendum and commend your staff on coming up with modifications that will allow the LCP amendment to be certified. We began this project 20 years ago and believe it reflects good long-range planning for managing coastal bluff retreat and provides a conceptual model for other coastal communities of California. If there are no questions from your commissioners, that concludes our comments.
Thank you. And staff, any additional comments? I don't suppose. Okay. Commissioner McClure.
Yes, at this time I would like to move that the Commission Certified Land Use Plan Amendment Number LCP-1-HUM-15-0011-2 is submitted by the County of Humboldt and recommend a no vote.
Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, just that if anybody has the opportunity to take a few minutes and drive down to Big Lagoon, it's well worth it, and it's an interesting configuration of the little cabins in there in the community, and this is going to be a good step for the community to be able to preserve itself.
Thank you. And you're asking for no vote as presented, and then you'll make a separate motion just to help to clarify why
that is.
Three
more motions.
That's right. Any unwillingness for unanimous no vote on this?
Was there a second?
Okay. We reject that as submitted.
Okay. At this time, I would like to move that the Commission certify Land Use Plan Amendment Number LCP-1-HUM-15-0011-2 for the County of Humboldt and if it is modified as suggested by staff, and ask for a yes vote.
Okay. Any questions, comments? Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote on this matter? Oh, Commissioner Schallenberger, excuse me.
No unwillingness for unanimous yes vote, but I just do. I do want to commend basically the project proponent as well as the local government for doing this. I'm so happy to be seeing this before us instead of a battle over a seawall, and this is exactly the kind of thing that. We need to continue to explore and be creative about in protecting our coast and while still allowing private people, private land to continue to be honored. So I just want to thank them very much for this because I so much appreciate something as creative as this as opposed to somebody demanding that we approve armoring our coast. Thank you.
Thank you. Any unwillingness then for a unanimous yes vote? And seeing none, then we do approve the amendment to the land use plan.
Okay, then I would now move that the commission reject the implementation program amendment number LCP-1-HUM-15-0011-2 for the County of Humboldt as submitted and recommend a yes vote.
Any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we then reject the implementation plan. And for we have two types of plans, our land use plan, and then we have an implementation plan, which is a much more detailed explanation of the conditions and criteria that are used to evaluate projects. And we're rejecting the one as approved. And we just did that by unanimous agreement. And then there would be one final.
Yes, I move that the Commission certify implementation plan amendment number LCP-1-HUM-15-0011-2 for the County of Humboldt if it is modified as suggested in the staff report and ask for a yes vote.
Okay, and I'm just going to make one comment, you know, to the staff in particular, but to the public as well. You know, it's an enviable situation to have a receiver site under the same ownership. And so in terms of this idea of adaptive retreat, we are going to have many more challenges when the retreat takes them right off their own property. So I think this is a good example of a community thinking ahead and working closely with us and local government on that. But it isn't going to be a model that will be easily replicable in other situations. I just think that's important to note. And the makers of the motion and second are asking for a yes. Is there any unwillingness for a yes vote? Seeing none, we then do also approve the implementation plan that allows us to go forward. And we want to acknowledge Mr. Tuttle's verbose presentation. Thank you. Okay. That completes this item.
That brings us to item 8B, which is the City of Eureka LCP amendment regarding principal and conditional uses within the city's commercial waterfront zoning districts, which comprises mostly Old Town Eureka and adjoining lands. We did point that area out at the very beginning of our boat tour this morning. As we mentioned a little bit on the boat tour, the amendment is designed to streamline local approval processes for allowable uses within that designated area by shifting some of those uses that are currently conditional uses and changing them instead to principally permitted uses. There's no new uses that are allowed, although several of the existing uses would be broken down into smaller categories with some of those moved to principal permitted use. We've determined that the amendment would have no impact on coastal resources and is consistent with the Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act, and we've determined that the LCP amendment qualifies for processing as a de minimis amendment and seek your concurrence with this determination. That concludes my remarks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions, any comments, any unwillingness for concurrence? And we do.
Okay, thank you. And so with the withdrawal of item 9A and then the previous approval under the consent calendar of item 9B, that finishes the North Coast portion of today's agenda. So I'll now turn the microphone over to Charles to present the remainder of the energy, ocean resources, and federal consistency portion of the agenda.
Great. Thanks, Bob. Item 10 is the Energy, Ocean Resources, and Federal Consistency Director's report, and there are a couple minor items on that report, including a waiver to the State Lands Commission to take begin trying to take care of a historic offshore well that is leaking oil, and also an amendment, an immaterial amendment to a previously issued permit. There is also the report of the negative determinations and no effect letters from Federal Consistency. I'm not aware of any opposition to these items. So if the commission is in concurrence with that, I could move on to the consent calendar.
Thank you. Any questions, any comments, any unwillingness for concurrence? Then we do concur.
And actually, before I do the consent calendar, I did want to just give you a short update on the Poseidon. Allison asked me to just let you know and remind you, you probably already know this, that the draft phase two report for the intake question on that plant in Huntington Beach is out, has been out for several weeks. It's available on our homepage if you want to review it. It's been under review now as a draft report. Poseidon had a public hearing a week or so ago. And received comments on that report. The staff is currently reviewing that report. They anticipate preparing a revised final report sometime in the next few weeks. So that would be then available for the continuation of the processing of that permit. Also, last week, September 2nd, Poseidon did resubmit its application to the Coastal Commission, so that has been done. As of last week, you may recall that they withdrew their application at the Commission's November 2013 hearing. We've been working with them since then on the expert panel process that has been working on the Phase 1 and Phase 2 reports. And just FYI, similar to the proposal you saw last time, they are proposing to use the existing power plant intake and outfall pipes, but adding some additional screens and diffusers. But that obviously is something that we'll be reviewing and bringing back to you sometime in the spring. So we can get more detail next month from Allison if you'd like. Any questions?
Thanks. I'd like just a couple things. One, do we have a sense of when that will be? Will that be in the first quarter, do you imagine, of 2016?
My gut is telling me second quarter.
Okay.
Yep. I can't recall the detail. I don't think it's going to be as early as the first quarter.
Okay. And then the second question was, at the time that we heard that there was some question about whether a notice of violation existed on the existing site from the existing energy company, do we know whether that has been resolved or will that be a part of this?
I don't believe that's been resolved, but I'm not sure to what extent it would be a part of the application that you'll be reviewing. So we can get back to you on any concerns you may have about ex partes. Is that?
Yeah, I think that'd be helpful for all
of us. Let me check with Lisa on the exact status of that.
Thank you. Okay.
So unless there are any more questions on that. That brings us to the consent calendar, item 11. And previously, Bob mentioned that 12B, the L.A. Department of Public Works application was moved to consent, and we're in agreement with the applicant on those conditions.
Okay. Do I have a motion for consent?
And
second. Motion and a second. Any discussion? Any unwillingness for unanimous consent? We do approve that consent calendar.
Okay. So the next item has been postponed, and that enforcement items have been postponed. That brings us to the North Central Coast District Director's report. And, again, there are, I believe, one emergency permit to report to you. And that's just a reporting item. It's an emergency permit to take care of some failing staircases and important accessway in the Half Moon Bay area. And that would bring us then to the Central Coast District Director's report. And again, there are some minor items to report and not aware of any objections about those. That includes a couple waivers and some immaterial amendments.
Okay. Any unwillingness for concurrence? Then we do concur.
And so I think that brings us to statewide again.
Right. So future agenda items.
Yeah.
Are there any commissioners who have any issues that they would like to see agendized in the months ahead?
Chair Kinsey, I'm told apparently there is an enforcement report. I didn't realize that, so Lisa's here to do that.
She stayed all these days just to be able to give this report. We better take it up. Yeah, it's okay. Now you're just between us and everything else. No, we're happy to have you. Absolutely. It was Charles that tried to blow you off.
He's been known to do that.
What was that?
Nothing. Nothing, boss.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Chair Kinsey and Commissioners. For today's enforcement report, I wanted to briefly report on the status of two recorded notices of violations, which you may remember that we're required to report you on those, which is one reason why I was so insistent on getting on the mic, and then give you updates on a few enforcement cases. And given our location today, we were going to focus on a couple of cases arising out of Northern California. I'd first like to report to you on the status of two cases. Next slide. In which we have recorded a notice of violation, which I will refer to as a NOVA, under Section 308.12 of the Coastal Act. As those of you who've been here a while may remember, this is a mechanism provided for in the Coastal Act, which is intended in large part to put people on notice and avoid potential innocent purchasers and avoid preventable problems by people buying properties being unaware of their condition. It's sometimes the result of formal hearings before the commission and sometimes the result of a negotiated solution. But in either case, we're required to report back to you to see if the violation is still existent and to check on the status of case resolution. In the first case I'd like to report on, ANOVA was recorded in May 2013 for unpermitted development by the Bacara Resort and Spa located in Goleta in Santa Barbara County. I'll just briefly provide an overview of the case and update you on the latest status. As you may remember, the violations included the failure to provide signage consistent with the requirements of the California Coastal Development Permit, placement of an unpermitted gate, removal of major vegetation, and installation of non-native landscaping. And many of these violations took place in the area areas that were protected for Native American matters. In April 2013, the Commission issued consent orders to resolve the unpermitted development and to require the installation of the signage required by the CDP. Next slide. Revegetation of the site has begun, and the public access signage, as you can see in the slide on the left, has been installed. The consent orders require a 5-year monitoring period to ensure that the vegetation remains healthy and will provide habitat. So that is still ongoing. Therefore, we need to keep the NOVA in place until the monitoring period is resolved. But we're very excited. And as you can see, the photo on the right shows the revegetation that's already begun. That was an area that the native vegetation had been completely removed and some sod had been put in because that's where weddings were taking place on the top of that bluff. And on the left are one of dozens of interpretive and directional public access signs that have gone in place. And it's really a very nice trail, and I invite you all to stop by and look at it if you're ever in the Goleta area. Next slide. For the next case, I'd like to give you a brief status report on the notice of violation recorded under 308.12, but also give you an update on the progress being made with the site restoration since this is a local case. ANOVA was recorded for this case, Lowell, in June of 2013, and in July of 2013, a consent cease and desist order and restoration order were reached with Bacara. The case involved violations including the placement of a 140-foot-long riprap revetment and gravel and rock, which removed native riparian vegetation. Although significant progress has been made in resolving the violations, as you can see in the next few slides, the case has not yet been fully resolved, so the NOVA needs to remain in place. The site is located in McKinleyville, an unincorporated area of Humboldt County on a coastal bluff terrace directly adjacent to the Mad River. The Mad River extends approximately 113 miles from its headwaters in the Coast Range and flows through Trinity and Humboldt counties. This area of Mad River serves as an estuary or a place where salt water from the ocean meets the fresh water which flows from the Mad River. Estuaries, as you know, provide important nursery habitat for fish and other aquatic organisms and also provide important nesting and feeding habitat for many species of birds. Mad River provides important habitat for the longfin smelt,
for example, and that is a species that's listed by the California Fish and Wildlife as threatened, and also for Chinook salmon, coho salmon, and steelhead trout. The Mad River and its banks are designated as ESHA by the Humboldt County LCP in addition. Next slide. As you can see, there was a revetment placed, and you can see it in both of these shots. The placement of the unpermitted revetment was not related to or necessary to protect any structures, which, as you know, is the trigger under the Coastal Act. And it also had the effect of removing the native riparian vegetation on the banks of the Mad River, and it replaced it with concrete. In addition, non-native invasive species established on the disturbed site, including cordgrass. The unpermitted development also resulted in the replacement of the natural soft bottom habitat of the river used by the fish with concrete riprap, which impacted the fish and other aquatic species that forage. Additionally, placement of revetments on riverbanks generally cause erosion, as the energy that's usually directed at the banks of the river is instead directed upstream or downstream of the revetment or scours the river bottom. Next slide. In mid-August, the restoration of the site began pursuant to the approved restoration plan under the consent orders. I'd like to take a few minutes just to walk you through a few of the photographs showing the restoration efforts. On the right, you can see a yellow turbidity curtain running parallel to the bank of the river, and that's used to prevent sediment from entering the river and bearing or causing other impacts to fish and aquatic species. During the work that was being undertaken. In the middle of the slide, you can see that there's a backhoe. It's the top of the slide being used to dig out the riprap, which was the violation here. Next slide. Erosion control measures, including erosion control fabric, which you can see on the left, and mulch, was used to protect the banks of the Mad River and to prevent erosion during the restoration. On the right, a backhoe is being used to even out the soil and make it suitable for planting. Next slide. Here's a view of the banks with the erosion control fabric and mulch installed. The majority of the vegetation and mitigation plans are scheduled to take place this winter, but you can at least see the first step of the vegetation taking place here. The sticks visible on the right coming out of the erosion control fabric are willow cuttings, and they help hold the erosion fabric in place and will also revegetate the slope with native tree cover. The other native plant species that will be installed will provide additional riparian vegetation to improve the habitat on the site. Next slide. Further restoration activities are to come, but we wanted to at least give you a brief view of how much progress has already been made and how already the area is starting to look a lot more like a native riverbank. So for the rest of the enforcement report, I wanted to note to you that we, at long last, have an enforcement officer for the North Coast District, Joshua Levine, and I'd like to introduce you to him today. Joshua has a BS in sociology and a master's in urban and regional planning. Prior to working for us, he worked on issues relating to freight and sustainable cities at the National Center for Freight Infrastructure Research and Education in Madison, Wisconsin, and also worked locally with the Redwood Community Action Agency, and he worked on portions of the Coastal Trail. We're very excited about this, and as you may know, we haven't had a North Coast enforcement staffer for over 10 years, so he's playing catch-up, but we're very excited to have him, and we're pleased to have him present the rest of the report today.
Good afternoon, Chair.
Good afternoon, Commissioner.
The next slide, please. So this is a case next to the Hikshari Trail, which is southern Eureka. This case involves a property that's at the confluence of the Elk River and the Humboldt Bay, directly adjacent to the Hikshari Trail, which is a portion of the Coastal Trail. The owner had placed approximately 50 cubic yards of fill on the emergent wetlands here, which was about a 1.23 acre parcel. Next slide, please. Staff conducted an investigation, opened a violation file, and sent an NOV letter on December 8, 2014, asking the property owner to cease unpermitted development activities and apply for a CDP to remove the fill and restore the damaged resources. This is a photo of the fill. You can kind of see it in the middle of the slide there. When it was initially placed, and it's taken from the Hikshari Trail, and this is looking north. And you can see the Elk River in the background, and beyond that is the Elk River spit. Next slide, please. And this is another closer look of the unauthorized fill, which has been placed in the gently sloping depression that runs north to south through the center of the parcel. The right side of the photo shows some of the scotch broom that has kind of been taking over areas and choke out the native species. The fill is a loamy soil where the native soil was sandy. Next slide, please. With the coastal trail on the right side of this slide and the unauthorized fill in the center, you can see the wax myrtles, which are in the background there. And those are the tallest trees on the site at approximately 12 feet. The lowest points on this parcel are tidally influenced and support a salt marsh habitat, including non-native dense-flowered cordgrass, the European beach grass, and native pickleweed. Next slide, please. After the fill was initially placed, the property owners spread out the fill piles, smothering all the vegetation on the site. And despite not having an enforcement officer, this was before my time, in the North Coast District at the time, staff moved quickly to address this violation. So, since if the unauthorized fill was removed rapidly, it could allow for the native species to return without a replanting, and it would also provide the best chance for recovery. Next slide, please. The property owners responded quickly to the NOV letter that was sent and agreed to hire a qualified consultant to prepare a restoration plan and to submit a CDP application. The CDP authorizing restoration was approved by the commission on May 14, 2015, and restoration commenced soon after. According to the restoration plan, approximately 3,000 square feet of wetlands had been covered in unauthorized fill. And this photo was taken approximately 2 months after restoration work had commenced, which it's very difficult to see there. perhaps you can see it in the monitors in front. And the site is recovering, and most of the fill that had been placed has been removed. Next slide, please. Next slide. Oh, there we go. This is a photo of the native salt rush that actually, this is not that photo. The next slide, please. There we go. That's the native salt rush that not only survived the fill and disturbance, but also the drought conditions that we've been experiencing to reemerge. We appreciated the cooperation of the property owner, who moved very quickly to prepare a restoration plan, secure approval, and implement the project. Next slide, please. This last case I'd like to report on today is from an area north of Crescent City, just north of Lake Earl. The subject property is a lot within the Pacific Shores subdivision located in an environmentally sensitive habitat area, including wetlands, habitat for the Oregon silver spot butterfly, which is a federally listed threatened species. Next slide, please. In October of 2003, we confirmed the existence of extensive unpermitted development, including fill of wetlands, change in intensity of use from a vacant lot to a residential use, placement of a trailer with a wooden addition, and placement of three inoperable recreational vehicles. The property was also being used as a dump for unwanted refuse. Next slide, please. These photos, taken in 2006, show the parcel before any cleanup had occurred. Staff opened a violation file in 2003, and the notice of violation was recorded on the property on November 14, 2006. Next slide, please. Another photo here of the inoperable vehicles and debris on the subject site. The site was also burned three times, which didn't help with the removal of debris and the vehicles. Next slide, please. The Border Coast Regional Airport Authority acquired the subject property in 2014 with the NOVA attached to use as mitigation for the Runway Safety Area Improvement Project in Crescent City, which was approved by the Commission in September 2013, that affected 17 acres of wetlands. And while some cleanup had occurred prior to their acquisition, the Airport Authority discovered that the cleanup was not complete. And given the state of the property and the recorded NOVA, staff found the lot unsuitable for use as part of the mitigation package. The Airport Authority subsequently agreed to clean up and remove remaining debris on the lot to resolve the violation. This lot is one of many in Pacific Shores that make up a significant segment of planned road removal and wetland restoration. GHD, an environmental consulting firm hired by the Airport Authority, described the cleanup as follows. approximately 12,000 pounds, or sorry, 1,200 pounds of debris was removed from the site in two full-size pickup trucks. The majority, over 90% by both weight and bulk, of the debris consisted of plywood and timbers. Some of it, as I said before, charred by fire. Other types of debris included carpet, a few small concrete blocks, which may have been footings for a structure at one time, assorted rusty metal car parts, fragments of tires, glass bottles, assorted small and typically unrecognizable plastic objects, remnants of plastic bags, and two hypodermic needles. All debris was immediately taken to a disposal facility in Crescent City. Next slide, please. Preliminary photos show that the lot appears to be covered in native dune and wetland vegetation. This includes the native hair grass, shown here in front of these willows. And you can see it. That's a bit of a close-up on the right-hand side. Staff is yet to inspect the site to confirm that the work has been completed properly. And when confirmed, staff will rescind the NOVA. And this case is a good example of how effective NOVAs are in effectuating a resolution of violations after property has changed hands. And that completes the enforcement report for September. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Schellenberger?
Several years ago, we took a field trip up to Pacific Shores with an armed guard along, I might add. So I'm just unclear. You keep talking about the lot, but this whole area had a number of paper subdivisions. And can you give us a larger view of what's happening there in terms of, because there were many situations like the one we saw the photos of. So where are we with the entire Pacific Shores?
We had issued a number of orders, as you may remember. A couple of them were complied with and many of them were not. And we have been in discussion with our colleagues at the Attorney General's office about how best to address those. But we have also begun an initiative to try to put together a task force up here. Now that we have Joshua in our office, we have more options. And we have done a lot of outreach with local governments who are very interested in trying to address this issue. And we're very optimistic about at least trying that as a different avenue to try to get parties together to cooperate. The one site that we reported on today was different because the county's position was slightly different because it was part of the airport mitigation. But we have many other cases of similar kinds of site debris and unpermitted development in other sites, which we're continuing to look at. But as I said, our most optimistic avenue right now is to try to work together with the local governments through, and a number of the law enforcement and environmental organizations are interested in working with us, which is very encouraging.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you and welcome. Okay, so that does bring us to future agenda items. If there are any commissioners that wanted to suggest or propose any or other activities, this would be the opportunity to do so. Commissioner Cox?
Actually, I don't have a future agenda item. Well, I just want to acknowledge something that was in our National Association of Counties newsletter that comes out every month or so, and it was a quick take on the most beautiful counties in America. And it's based on the prevalence of physical characteristics such as temperate climate, access to bodies of water, mountains, natural amenities, most often mentioned as desired in physical locales. And this is from the U.S. Department of Agricultural and Natural Amenities Scale. And the rankings were, number one county was Ventura County. Number two was Humboldt. Number three was Santa Barbara. Number four was Mendocino. And number five was Del Norte County. And that's, in the entire United States, the five most beautiful were in California, all three of which my colleague to my right has the pleasure of representing. But that says a lot about California, but it also says a lot about coastal California and what the Coastal Commission is doing. So I just wanted to yeah. share that.
We appreciate the sharing. I think it says a lot about NACO, too, actually. But they love to come west. But very good, and thank you for bringing that to our attention. Other commissioners, Dr. Lester, did you want to make a comment?
I was just going to say that Milwaukee had posted that report on our Facebook page, and so if you guys see things that you think are deserving of getting the word out on, I'm sure she'd like to hear about it.
Very good. Okay. With that, I think that completes the Coastal Commission meeting for September, and we will see the public and each other in October in Long Beach, and look forward to a full and active agenda then. Thank you.